Hello, and welcome to the Television Spotlight on the Comic Book Page podcast. My name is John Mayo. In this episode, we'll be having a spoiler-filled discussion about a television show that we think you'll enjoy. In this episode, I am joined by my sister Kay, and we're going to have a spoiler-filled discussion on the second season of The Mandalorian. This was another 8-episode season, and the runtimes on some of these episodes felt kind of short.
Yeah, 32 minutes.
There was two that were, well, we watched 6, 7, and 8 tonight out of the 8 for this season, and 6 was about 32 minutes, 7 was about 34 minutes, maybe? And I think that's including credits?
Could be.
So, I get when you're on a streaming service, you've got some wiggle room and stuff. But, you know, on the Netflix shows, they would tend to average between 55 minutes and an hour or something.
Mm-hmm.
And I get that there is a ton of effects on this show. And that every minute is probably much more expensive than on, you know, like a Daredevil or something like that, where there are stunts and there are effects, but not like...
Every second.
Every second, yeah. So, little disappointed with the runtimes on some of this. Not massively disappointed, but, you know, would have liked more.
I love the closing credits. The storyboardish art.
Which, ironically, we didn't get on the last episode.
That's a good point.
But the storyboard stuff they do for the end credits is beautiful. Of course, then I find it hilarious that they cut to the credits in micro print after that.
Oh, they do. We watch on big screen, and it's micro print.
Yeah. They had some great guest stars this season.
Mm-hmm.
Timothy Oliphant, Katie Sackhoff, a couple of recurring ones from the first season and such. Overall, though, I don't know that I thought this season was as good as the first.
This season was more episodic.
Mm-hmm.
So at the end of each episode, it was kind of easier to wait until the next episode. The mission was kind of more clear cut in terms of season one. It was, are you keeping the child or are you not keeping the child?
Right. But he had a clear mission at the end of that of go get this kid to the Jedi.
And that was kind of interesting to me because reunite him with his people
mm-hmm.
was never his species. His, quote, home. It was Jedi.
Well, that makes sense, given the Mandalorian mindset
mm-hmm.
of your family is who adopts you, essentially.
Yeah.
So they did that arc for the season. I'll be honest, I wasn't totally sure they were going to get it done in a single season.
I found it interesting of kind of a go to a Jedi temple and put the message out, if you will, in a very Jedi way.
Yeah, put the kid on the special Jedi rock, and he'll make a long-distance call. And
E.T. phone home.
Yeah.
I need a mentor. Anybody feel like mentoring me? If so, and come find me.
That whole sequence at the temple with the kid, not something we'd really seen the Jedi do before. Much less a neophyte, you know, youngling of only 50 years old.
The closest we come is Luke Skywalker out on his island when he sits out on the rock and...
The force projection, the telepresence stuff, I'm fine with. It was the ring of light that the Mandalorian kind of kept getting bounced off of.
The force field ring of light, yes. That was fun. And I'm sorry, there were so many times in that episode where Stephen Amell's rules of writing applied.
Yep.
You know, you must make bad decisions for good drama to take place.
Well, that or they just don't pay attention to, okay, you've had him put his jetpack down and he never goes back for it.
He had the opportunity to pick it up and he didn't because we need him to not have his jetpack. And honestly, nobody else has ever asked him to take his jetpack off when they say lower your weapon.
Yeah, well, again... given it was Boba Fett, which was nice.
Yes, and it was someone who understood the armor in a different way. Yeah, I'll get that, but yeah.
One thing, though, that sequence brings to mind is what happens to his ship.
Mm.
Now, over the course of this season, his ship's in decent shape, gets the tar beaten out of it, gets magically rebuilt, gets exploded.
Well, I mean, it got patched together by the water the fishing planet. Village
or the oh shoot, what's the admiral's species? The calamari.
Yeah, I mean, it looked like they used
calamari or whatever
fishing nets to hold pieces together.
Oh yeah,
and you know, there for a while there were all these ropes in the cockpit. And I'm like, seriously, we turned into a pirate ship.
I would not have wanted to fly in that thing after some of what happened to it in the first season.
Very true.
You know, when the Jawas took it apart or something.
Well, at one point it was, we're all going to get nice and cozy in the cockpit
mm-hmm.
because we have gaping holes in the rest of the ship and we're just going to fly and ignore it.
Yeah, that some of that was happening in the early episodes. And I felt those were a lot more episodic than maybe some of the later ones.
Yeah.
Because I did think there was enough of a through line for the season. But some of it felt like, okay, we're going to go, you know, kill this big creature out in the desert and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So he can get, you know, the armor. The armor's going to play into other stuff. That's going to, you know. I just never felt that this had quite as good of, I mean, the action, there was a ton of it and it was good. You know, when we got the Jedi from the Clone Wars mm-hmm. Series here with Rosario Dawson, I thought that was great action and stuff. Good sequences.
Well, and a great character with a great encapsulated story for that village.
Mm-hmm. Well, and she's going to get a spin out.
Yeah, and rightfully so with yeah. what they presented.
Well, and also that character has seasons worth of stuff in the computer animated Clone Wars, where she was the Padawan for Anakin.
Mm.
So there's a lot of backstory to be had there. And I respect the fact that Lucasfilms has kept enough control over its continuity that there is one Star Wars continuity. And there's some stuff that kind of got brushed aside to an extended canon or extended universe or whatever phrase they used for it. But the things that they have said, no, this is part of canon, hold true.
Mm-hmm.
And I've watched all of the movies. I've watched, you know, the two seasons of The Mandalorian. I have not watched all of the Clone Wars stuff.
Mm.
I've watched some of it. I just never got through. And that went, I don't know, 5 seasons or something. Plus, there's Star Wars Rebels, Star Wars Rebellion, Star Wars. I mean, there've been a number of animated shows. And that's not even counting the Saturday morning cartoon stuff from back in the day. So there's a lot of Star Wars lore. And based on a recent investment meeting or whatever, when they announced, here's all the other stuff they're going to do, there's a ton more on the way.
Yeah. Well, it's a very rich universe.
It is. And I like how they're doing a live action television series. Granted, 8 episodes a year is a manageable, particularly when it's less than 8 hours a year of content a year. They've got the sets look amazing.
Mm-hmm.
And granted, some of that's computer trickery to fake it out or whatever. I don't give a damn how they do it. It looks amazing. The scenic vistas and stuff like that, that's cool.
The Jedi Temple, which was meant to be not quite a Stonehenge, mm-hmm. but that type of thing. I mean, it was gorgeous.
Well, and then you look at the outfits, the props, and all of that stuff. I mean, they spare no expense on this, and it really comes off on screen, and then they get some great talent.
Mm-hmm.
So, and they capture the tone, the style, the feel of the Star Wars universe. Like, when they had to go infiltrate the one place to go find out where
Moth Gideon was,
and they basically are running kind of the dynamite truck across town or whatever.
Yeah.
To sneak in, and that felt like the sort of thing. You know, granted, we'd seen that sort of a thing on MacGyver as well, but if they did it in a way that felt Star Wars-ish.
Well, you're helping the enemy get the raw materials to make their weapons to their refinery, because it's the only way you can sneak in.
Mm-hmm.
You're having to fend off the pirates that in other circumstances you might well be helping
mm-hmm.
or be a part of, which is just frustrating.
Yeah.
And the frustration of having to fight the guys you'd normally side with is definitely apparent. And then when you have finally made it to the equivalent of the finish line and you get saluted by your enemy
mm-hmm.
for being the best among them.
Yeah. If you hadn't tried to infiltrate the base, they wouldn't have gotten any of that stuff into the refinery that day.
Yeah. Yeah. And then at the very end, when you've completed the mission, and the one guy who was least trustworthy on your team, but you needed for the intel he had, says, "Will you hand me that weapon?" And he's the sharpshooter who takes the shot that destroys all that raw material you got in there.
Because
he just can't let the enemy have it.
Well, it was a little bit of a redemption arc for that character.
It was, and it played well.
And I expect to see that character again next season, because we'd seen him first season.
Yeah, I really want to.
And there's a couple of things coming out of this where they ended on a fairly clean note, where they almost could end the series if they wanted to.
Mm.
But there's also a couple of things that have to happen with this Mandalorian. Before we're really done with him.
One of the things I noticed in those final few episodes was the titles of the episodes were applicable in more than one way.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the Jedi. That's the one where we go to the planet looking for the Jedi. But it's also the one when we're really realizing that the path for the child is to be a Jedi.
Yeah.
And not just to stay with the Mandalorian.
Well, and it's not just that we find a Jedi, but we get sent to go find another Jedi.
Yes. So the Jedi applied in so many ways there.
Well, the believer.
Yes.
You could argue was the guy who did the sharpshooting, or you could argue, you know, it was the Mandalorian himself, and because there's definitely some questioning of his beliefs through his actions.
But you could also argue that it was the Imperial officer.
Yeah.
That really triggered the final step of the other guy's redemption.
Well, there's a lot of ways you can interpret those titles, and I think the fact that there are those multiple angles is just a brilliant move, because you could watch with a crowd of people and all of them could say, yeah, man, that was a really great title for that episode, for absolutely different reasons.
Well, the final episode, The Rescue.
Mm-hmm.
Bo-Katan went to rescue the Darksaber. Mandalorian went to rescue the child.
Mm-hmm.
And in the end, they were all rescued by someone else.
Yes. And I did think the character they brought in for that episode, I was surprised they did, but it made sense. I was kind of thinking, oh, it looks like it's going to be that character.
Well, and it finally, for me, firmly anchored, okay, when and where are we?
Yeah, this was told that was a couple of years after, but now we finally got a visual of, okay, it is just a couple of years after that first trilogy.
I mean, it felt like that, but there was an aspect of once upon a time, there was a Jedi of this kid's species making Yoda feel like he was long, long ago.
Well, if you think about it, in the original trilogy, the scene with Darth Vader and all the officers... Oh, that ancient religion.
Yeah.
Ancient, it was still active when you grew up.
Yeah.
You know? And, I mean, if I don't think people today consider shows from the 80s ancient history.
No, but I was thinking that my goddaughter refers to me as listening to the oldies because I listened to music from when I was in college. But there's a strong difference between oldies and ancient.
You know, if you were to reference the A-Team or Night Court or, you know, Seinfeld or The Cosby Show or, you know, whatever of that era.
You're somewhere in the oldies or classics.
You're dating yourself.
Yes.
But it's not like you're talking about, you know, the Honeymooners or stuff from the dawn of television.
Well, it's funny because when I think ancient religion, I think something like Druids.
Mm-hmm.
And part of that is, to me, ancient is no longer fully understood.
Not even no longer fully understood, but it is something that is not just generations past being understood, but centuries, perhaps millennia.
I mean, it's so completely fallen out of practice that you can't find somebody who it's, yeah, when I was a child, I knew a druid.
Yeah, it's only known about through the history books.
Yeah.
And again, through the prequel movies, the Jedi were all over the place. The Sith were around. This was, you know, literally a generation back from... now, granted, Leia, Luke and stuff, mid-20s, maybe, you know,
How much do you really listen to your parents' stories? I mean, that's part of the gist of it. No, I'm kidding.
Well, it's not just listening to the stories. There are Jedi temples. There was, the Jedi were ubiquitous, you know? I almost equate the Jedi kind of like the Texas Rangers and stuff.
Mm, mm-hmm.
One riot, one ranger. Wow, that's a tongue twister today.
It is.
One Jedi, trade delegation to put down or what have you.
Well, and we saw that beautifully in the final episode.
Mm-hmm. And again, two episodes this season, we get some really great Jedi action.
Yeah.
You know, this time more through security monitors than firsthand, but even some of it firsthand.
Well, when we did have the episode where we were asking the Jedi for help, I mean, it was very much a who would expect a Jedi and a Mandalorian to partner up.
They did some great stuff with that, and I would really like to see a prequel series that really sets the foundation of what is it between the Mandalorians and the Jedi,
mm-hmm.
when and how did the fall of, Mandalore happen.
Well, and also the split they allude to within the Mandalorians.
Yeah. And we've gotten a lot more lore around the Mandalorians and such.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm curious in these animated shows how much it may have been kind of trickled out there as well.
Mm.
And what is currently considered to be official canon for this universe.
Yeah.
Because, in a couple of years, it's going to be even harder to catch up.
Mm. Yeah, the rate they're putting stuff out, I would agree.
Yeah. But, I mean, really, with this season in particular, you could watch it. I mean, the first one you could definitely do, on a Saturday, get it done in a day, no problem. This, I think, you start promptly after work and stuff, you could probably get it done in an evening.
More than 4 hours. Because they were more than half an hour each.
Yeah, yeah.
But then
probably two evenings then. You're right. I think we did 3, 2, and 3.
Mm-hmm. Well, and we only did 2 because I was a little impatient to keep going.
Yeah.
Because we did think about just doing it in 2 nights.
Well, and we started our marathon such that, we finished it when this one aired on the day it aired.
Yeah.
So the fact that 6 and 7 together, those two episodes totaled up to just over an hour, kinds of skews mm-hmm. things. But it's a fun show. I think they've got a good cast.
Well, part of what I'm loving about the show is Cara Dune
mm-hmm.
recurs, but is so interesting she could have her own show.
And I think there's been talk of her getting a spinoff.
Honestly, Timothy Oliphant and his little village were so much fun. They and their pseudo-truce with the Sand People.
I think giving him... I don't know that I'd go with a spinoff, but I would definitely do like a 2-hour movie or something. The trick with that is how to reposition him after the status quo change for him in that episode and not have it be justified in space.
Yes. Yes. Well, and there was one scene where you actually called out, "Hey, Raylan, remember what show you're on."
Yeah.
That was funny. Well, and even if Timothy Oliphant's character just kind of had gotten a reputation because of what happened,
mm-hmm.
of people thinking he was the one who created the truce with the Sand People.
Mm. Yeah, actually, that'd be the more interesting way to go, is he's, I don't want to say failed up.
Yeah, but other communities are trying to get him to come and do for them
yeah.
what he did here, and he no longer has the armor. He no longer has the Mandalorian who actually knows the sign language and the grunts.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's I think, a lot they could do with that character. And frankly, even if it was just justified in space,
it'd still be fun.
I'd be okay with it.
Yeah, it would. So you've got two characters that were so interesting,
mm-hmm.
they'd be fun to watch. The Jedi is getting her own spinoff.
Osaka, or whatever her name is, yeah.
With Bo-Katan, as interesting as what they're doing there is with the go get Mandalore back, I think the prequel of what happened with Mandalore is more interesting.
I would almost do that as a set of paired shows where you've got the current day stuff with Katie Sackhoff's character and all of that. Do it as like 6-episode seasons. And then opposite it, you know, do six episodes of that, wait a little bit, do six episodes of back in the day. You know, what's the origin of the Darksaber? What happened to Mandalore? All that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And have them each be standalone, but something that adds to the other one.
Yeah, something that mirrors and echoes.
Mirrors, echoes, sets up some questions, answers some things, you know, what have you.
Yeah.
Because I definitely think they could move forward on the modern day stuff. And I think doing a set in the past thing, it would just be awesome to see a slew of Mandalorians going against a slew of Jedi,
mm-hmm.
plus clone troopers or stormtroopers or whatever.
Yeah.
You know, battle droids in the mix.
The fact that in 16 episodes, they've shown us such a rich universe that we see potential for 4 or 5 spinoffs.
Oh, easily. And I'm sure if we'd given it some thought, we could probably come up with another half dozen.
I mean, but that shows you what a rich universe they're putting on the screen.
Well, it also is one of the fun things about the Star Wars franchise is it is not bound to a particular location.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not just a, let's go to one place, have an adventure, come home, go to another place, have an adventure, come home. It's not the away team missions either.
Yeah.
There's a nomadic aspect. I mean, it very much feels like an Old West show in space.
It does. Yes.
It's just instead of going to another town, you're going to another town on another planet.
Yeah. And your trusty steed happens to be a ship that gets holes in it.
Well, and again, when they're doing the dynamite truck bit, that felt like kind of the train robbery sort of episode.
Yeah.
The one thing we never got, I think, really at all this season was the bounty hunting.
He got offered a bounty.
He did.
And Mando is very particular with his words.
Well, and he was asked if he was still on the registry. And he's like, well, last I looked,
mm-hmm.
you know.
And he was asked if he would go find the Jedi. And he asked in return, where would I find the Jedi?
Yes. At that point, he was very much a man of his word and very particular with his word. I felt some of the stuff they did later in the season compromised what he would and would not do and why.
He would do anything for the child.
Yes. And that superseded other things that prior to that he'd held sacrosanct and just would not violate. Now he will. So.
Well, but it also goes in with that first Jedi saying, the child's bond with you is so strong, I don't believe I'm the one to train them.
Mm-hmm. I was surprised he didn't want to go with the kid there at the end.
So was I. So was I. And I know you'll protect him with your life, but I'd feel better if I could protect both of you with my life.
And there's time that had elapsed from that scene and then the end credit scene at the end of the season, because we see two characters now elsewhere. So what happened to the other characters?
Yeah.
The Mandalorian, the other two.
Bo-Katan and her partner.
Yeah.
And there was a third Mandalorian with Bo-Katan and her partner the first time we saw them, but not the second time.
Yeah, yeah. They didn't lose anybody when they stole that first ship, did they?
I don't think so. I could be wrong, but I didn't think they did.
I don't think so either. I'd have to rewatch it.
And he may have just been with that first ship.
Somebody's got to keep an eye on it. There was no mention of that first ship at all in that episode this last time, so it's like, what happened?
Yeah.
So, or did they end up crashing that ship? I forget.
No, I thought they managed to keep it.
He jumped out of that ship as they were flying off. Yeah. That's right. That's right. And again, that was a great visual, too.
Yes.
Yeah, the stuff they're able to do on... Well, and I'd seen a little bit of behind-the-scenes stuff on something where they're talking about... I think it was while I was watching a YouTube video on the announcement of all these you know, Marvel and Star Wars shows and such. Where they're like, yeah, we're treating it, you know, just like we do any motion picture. And it's like, it shows.
Yeah.
And I would be very pleased if they could put the power behind, you know, the Marvel shows and the Star Wars shows towards some other franchises that are now falling under their jurisdiction.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm very curious about a lot of the other shows they've announced. They teased a spinoff at the very end of this with that end credits scene.
Yeah.
You know, we know that the Jedi is getting her own. So there's no shortage of material they're trying to put out there. And I think with the pandemic still going on, you know, we're recording this in late December, and it's still going to go on for quite some time. that leaning into things for a streaming service is probably a smarter move than leaning in towards trying to get stuff into movie theaters.
I think so.
And I hate to say that. I love the movie theater experience.
Yeah.
But I've got a TV projector thing. We're throwing it up on a wall. This thing is 120-inch diagonal or something crazy.
Something like that, yeah.
And these projectors are, that's a bit of an investment, but they're not crazy expensive. You know, I think I haven't priced one lately, but I think for, $1,000, you can get a good, high def projector, possibly even 4K these days with that. All you need is a big enough room and a blank wall to throw it on.
Mm-hmm.
And we're doing it on a wall that's just a normal, standard textured wall in a house.
Yeah.
So we've got effectively, not the movie theater experience, but surprisingly close.
Mm-hmm.
So it's something I definitely think people should consider if they've got, the physical layout in their house for it. Particularly since, we've been homebound for quite some time and will be for a while longer. It's, to me, one of the better investments I've made, in terms of personal entertainment systems. Now, granted, would I want to see something like James Cameron's Avatar film or something like that on it? Man, I saw that in 3D on IMAX, and that's the way to go.
Yeah, exactly.
But man, watching The Mandalorian with the epic vistas and all of that stuff on the big screen here, it's awesome.
Yeah.
The colors pop, the visuals pop, and it's almost legible end credits. I am amazed the micro print they do those on. Now, granted,
yeah,
they go for numerous pages with probably at least literally 1,000 names on them.
It's amazing.
For all the effects and all that stuff. And I certainly think everyone who's worked on it deserves to have their name up there. It'd be nice if it was legible.
Yeah.
So I think with a third season, they need to resolve what happens to Moff Gideon.
Mm-hmm.
They need to resolve what happens with the Darksaber.
Mm-hmm.
Who gets it, who fights who for it, that kind of a thing.
Yeah, because apparently you can't just yield.
Yeah. I'm trying to think what else they set up that they really need to come back and do, and then what is the Mandalorian's impetus moving forward? Does he just go back to bounty hunting?
Or does he help reclaim Mandalore? Especially now that he's the one holding the power, because he holds the saber.
Yeah. I think that's the direction they kind of have to go in. They spent too much time setting that up this season to not have that be the focus next time.
Yeah.
And there's a couple other characters it'd be fun to, go see again or whatnot in the course of that, because they're not at the point where they could just go charge up against, I was going to say Mandalore, but they keep saying it's been glassed over or something. We need to go see Mandalore next season.
Yeah.
See if it's salvageable, if it's not, or what state it's in. And then whom do they have to fight to free it, to reclaim it,
or, it, whatever.
Whatever.
Yeah.
We need a clarification of the status quo, both politically and physically, of the planet and of the people. Because it could be that they spend a lot of the season gathering their army.
Mm, yeah, gathering. The
Mandalorians are scattered across space.
Yeah.
And if you think about it, it'd be a fascinating thing to do, because then the title The Mandalorian goes from the singular,
yeah,
to the, all-encompassing, of the race or
yeah,
the people.
Yeah.
So I'd like to see that and see some. It was fun when at the end of the first season, I think it was, when we got all of those Mandalorians, mm-hmm, fighting together and such. It'd be nice to get a little bit more of that kind of mass chaos going.
Yeah. Well, when they all rallied together around a foundling.
Mm-hmm.
It was a common cause they could all believe in.
Yeah. Well, and I think there's an opportunity there, not at this point in time in the Star Wars universe, but if they were to jump past the third trilogy, where there's a realization that the Mandalorian way is to find people, who need to be adopted and adopt them, essentially.
Mm-hmm.
And make them realize there's a parallel between that and the Jedi, who find the Jedi and, you know, train them and adopt them, essentially.
Mm-hmm.
And how they're almost flip sides of the same coin, and some of it's training, some of it's, you know, gift with the Force or whatever. But to meld that into a almost generals and, I don't say foot soldiers, but you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
You know?
So I don't get to see the child in Beskar armor?
That'd be interesting, too.
Just saying.
But you know what I mean? Get it to where there's a checks and balances sort of approach between the two, and they both become equally respected and able to work together, forces of good in the galaxy.
Yeah.
But I don't think that can happen at this point in time of the Star Wars universe, just because of the state the Jedi were in, you know, by the time of the First Order in the third set of movies. So I'm looking forward to third season of this. I'm looking forward to the spinoff they teased, the other spinoffs they've announced.
Mm-hmm.
We've also got to watch Solo at some point, because you still haven't seen that.
You are correct.
And I'm enjoying what they're doing with the Star Wars franchise. I think they're proving with this show that they can tell stories beyond just Jedi or just the Skywalker you know, clan.
I love that they do stories with heart in them and with that, I want to say, good moral fiber in terms of the honorable decisions, making them when they're the hard decisions and stuff like that. It's, to me, it's an uplifting show to watch in that respect.
Yeah, because even when he compromised some of his earlier values, he was always doing it for the right reason.
Yeah.
And that's definitely respectable.
Well, and like at one point somebody offers him payment and he's like, no, I didn't do the job.
Mm-hmm.
You know, another point, Boba Fett and the one who's working with him at the time are like, you know, we are still going to help you. And he's like, no, that wasn't the deal. And they're like, no, this is how the deal was phrased.
Yes.
We are still going to help you. So there's a large sense of honor in the show that I really enjoy.
Well, and it's funny because I never got that sense of honor out of the few scenes of Boba Fett in the original trilogy.
I don't think we got to know him enough to know it.
Fair enough, fair enough. He was just a bounty hunter.
Exactly. That's all we got to know about him.
Yeah. It might be worth rewatching the original trilogy at some point. Just to, maybe when we're getting closer to the third season of this or something.
Yeah.
Just to reset where the universe was at that point in time.
Yeah.
So, yeah, there it's a fun universe. I'm glad they're doing some good stuff with it. I think going into this series, it's like I knew kind of sort of what a Mandalorian is, but not quite. And they've redefined it substantially, I think, in this, or at least from my knowledge.
They've given it a good definition for me.
Yes. Yeah, that's the thing, is they've solidified that. And I've read some of the novels. I've read some of the comics. I've watched, you know, some of the Clone Wars show and that stuff. But they made this very accessible and enticing to dive deeper into the franchise.
Yeah.
And again, I'm glad they're taking good care of it and growing it and not just strip mining it. Anything else?
I think that does it.
Cool.
The show notes and form for this podcast can be found at www.comicbookpage.com under the podcast and forum sections of the website. Please email us at theguys@comicbookpage.com and let us know what you think of what was discussed in this episode. Thanks for listening.